This is Hitchhiking Off the Map.
So we won. And it was so moving, I have to tell you. You know, I'm not a big fan of the system, but to watch 10 average Americans walk into that room for the first time and sit down in that jury box, an American Airlines reservation agent, a power disperser for Pacific Gas and Electric, a bank vice president, a doctor's wife, 8 women, 2 men, to have our fate resting in the hands of these people who'd never heard of us before, that was profound. And when our day was over, they just handed us an overwhelming victory.
And today on Hitchhiking Off the Map, 2 stories about trees. This is Conrad Bishop.
And Elizabeth Fuller. And this is a show about journeys, although trees aren't commonly thought of as travelers.
At least under their own power. But you could say that about lots of people as well.
Let's go right to the stories. First story. And we should say that in the cauldron of progressive politics, there are huge disagreements about tactics, personalities, issues of civil disobedience, etc. And our purpose here is not to tout one branch of the movement over another, but simply to tell one person's story. This is Daryl Cherney.
Now when I was born, it was such a fright. I looked in the mirror, I saw I was white.
You've seen Daryl Cherney in the headlines from time to time. He's one of those people the media calls controversial. We don't like to glamorize our guests, so I asked him, what's the worst stuff anybody's ever said about you?
Well, you know, I mean, the fantasized ones are that I'm rich, I drive an SUV, that I'm in it for showbiz and in it for myself, I don't care about the trees, that nobody respects me, and that I'm just taking advantage of all these great activists, and I'm an opportunist.
Not to mention the public accusations of being a bomber and terrorist. Daryl Cherney is an Earth First activist, a singer-songwriter focused on saving the redwoods in Northern California. And in 1990, while organizing an action against the Maxam Corporation and receiving numerous death threats, he and his colleague Judy Barry decided to get out of the timber region and do a promotional roadshow in the Bay Area, letting things cool off.
So it actually came as a bit of a surprise to us on May 24th, 1990, as we were leaving Oakland, California, more or less heading down to the University of California at Santa Cruz to do one of our musical reviews and organizing drives, that a bomb went off in Judy Barry's car underneath her seat, almost killing her and slightly injuring myself. And it came as an even greater shock when the FBI showed up and within a matter of minutes, truly, blamed Judy Barry and I for carrying the bomb knowingly, the bomb that almost killed us. You know, I was a goody two-shoes when I grew up. I wanted to believe the policeman was my friend. And so from that moment onward, we had to fight the Federal Bureau of Investigation to prove our innocence. We filed a lawsuit, a civil rights lawsuit, saying that the reason the FBI blamed us for bombing ourselves was because they intended to stop our political free speech. They wanted to tarnish our reputations. But to make a very long story short, in April of 2002, we went to trial against the FBI and the Oakland Police Department. And a unanimous 10-person jury in federal court listened to Earth First, and they listened to the FBI. And when the day was done, they believed that Earth First was telling the truth and the FBI was lying. And it really led me to a conclusion that it's really Earth First and the environmental groups and the social justice groups who are the guardians of our national security, and the FBI, who's the threat. And it also made me realize that we'd been transformed from trying to stop the lumber companies from clear-cutting the ancient trees to stopping the FBI from clear-cutting our civil rights.
Will we all rise up, my friends? Take the bastards on to the bitter end. Hey, there ain't much time left for us to make our stand.
So I asked, could you give me the 5-minute plot summary of how you got from the delivery room to a bombed out car and a courtroom in Oakland, California?
I was born and raised in New York City in Midtown Manhattan, and that gave me an acute sense of awareness real pushiness, the ability to take my five-year-old body and slam it into a subway car so I could get on during rush hour. I ran into a television commercial producer when I was 5 years old riding my tricycle, and I wound up doing commercials between the ages of 5 and 11 for Tony Schwartz, the same man who made the advertisement against Barry Goldwater of the little girl picking daisies while the atom bomb's blowing up in the background. And in his house, I was exposed to all these political books and records because he was a political ad producer, among other things. I have come from a long line of musicians. My grandfather played literally every instrument that there was. My uncles and cousins were all professional musicians. And I have music in my blood. I graduated college, and I immediately went to work for record companies. And I worked for Roadshow Records and United Artists Records, which was in part of the Capitol conglomerate. I went there from teaching typing, and then I went on to become a moving man. A lot of people joke around saying that I'm so flighty, and I just moved from place to place so much that I needed the weight of sofas and refrigerators to ground me out, keep me on earth way back then. And it's always been my intention to play music and somehow or other, you know, earn a living through my music. I can do that now, but back then I couldn't. I also want to say that from a very early age, I had an interest in magic and metaphysics, but I had no idea how to get there, where to go to learn. And one day when I had opened up a typing school in the middle of my living room, a woman answered my ad in the New York Times, and she asked me if I taught typing and if I would do a barter in exchange for typing lessons. And I said, well, what do you do? And she said, I'm a psychic. I said, I'll be right over. And it was then that I started going to Lady Vanessa Tama's New Age circles that she had back in West 72nd Street in Manhattan. And it was at that moment that I learned that I was on a path, and that every moment of every day I had the ability to make a decision to stay on my path and take the right course. The reason that I left New York City had a lot to do with my interest in the natural world and my complete ignorance in the natural world. I had never watched a single plant go through all four seasons of change in, you know, living in that Midtown Manhattan apartment building. And I knew intellectually that I was missing something. I knew that we were animals, human beings on this planet, and that we had a natural way of living on this planet, and I had no idea what that was. And so I very methodically and intellectually loaded up my van in 1985 and set out on a quest to hit the West Coast with all the stuff in the back of my truck. I took the northern route, and I was coming down the Oregon coast, and I saw this dark figure walking down the highway. So I pulled over, and into my van walked Kingfisher, member of the Native American Church, a full-blooded Cheyenne, and a road man. And he walks into my truck, he sees all my possessions in the back, and we get to talking, and he says to me, what do you want out of life? And I said, well, I'd like to learn to live off the land and save the world. And he said, you should go to Garberville. And there he took me. And I walked right out of my van and into the offices of EPIC, the Environmental Protection Information Center, which was suing to save redwood trees, to stop the clear-cutting of giant 2,000-year-old ancient beings. One of the things that I joke about when I moved from New York City, from Midtown Manhattan to Garberville, California, from a city of 8 million to a city of a town of 1,500, which happened to be the pot-growing capital of California, was that I moved from the most paranoid city on the East Coast to the most paranoid city in the West. And when I became an activist, I realized that all those skills of watching your back in New York City and developing eyes in the back of your head from somebody who might randomly want to kill you came in handy and were the exact same skills I needed to protect myself against people who might want to deliberately do me harm.
So the lesson is, be careful about picking up hitchhikers?
Oh, be very careful. And choose them wisely, and they may take you to some interesting places.
Gramps Pass. Gramps Pass.
Gramps Pass.
A place where they want to kick my ass.
It had been my intention to become politically active, but I wasn't an organizer. I had organizational abilities, I worked for corporations between the ages of 16 to 25. I worked for Hawaiian Holidays, the National Football League, Fordham University, the Crown Business School, United Artists Records. I mean, I had a nine-year corporate background. I was a fast typist, good on the phones, a great salesperson, good at marketing. But I had never applied those skills to the political arena. But when I came to Garberville, I walked into an office that didn't even possess a typewriter. Then I just looked at them all and I said, you know, I think maybe I can contribute something to this here organization. So I joined the board of directors, helped them type a grant, insisted that an IBM Selectric 2 typewriter be part of their budget, and started putting together a media list and learning about forests for the first time. Because let's not forget that I came from Midtown Manhattan, where I couldn't tell the difference between an oak tree and a pine. So when Kingfisher brought me to the environmental office that was suing to save the redwoods, I had no idea it was even legal to cut down a 2,000-year-old tree. I think my biggest surprise was that the redwoods were being cut down, including giant ancient redwoods, and that nobody knew about it. The biggest new thing for me was that there were all these people living off the power grid, you know, heating their homes with wood stoves from firewood they'd cut themselves, and electrifying their houses with solar panels and car batteries, and that this was possible to do. And when I got to Humboldt County, I started writing songs like I'd never written before. And then when I got to the redwoods and I could see with my own eyes firsthand these great trees being cut down, I got a gush of reality, and I found a new center within myself that allowed my songwriting to shift. And I recognized that instantly.
Jumping over about 15 years in 90 seconds, the magic of radio, he wrote a song that got lots of local airplay.
Next thing you know, my phone rang, and the country western station up in Eureka wanted to play it. And then KXGO, the rock station, wanted to play it. And both news stations put me on the nightly news, singing the song while they showed pictures of the floodwaters in the background. It was like a video. And it was then that I came to this startling realization that every day is a slow news day in Humboldt County. And it was then that I realized that I could do media work for the redwoods.
He got involved with Earth First and became involved in Actions.
And around March of 86, a friend of mine had organized a gorilla tree planting on a Georgia Pacific clearcut, which we would trespass and plant trees, 3,000 of them. And when it was all done, I said, you know, is anybody doing a press release on this? And nobody was. So, hey, can I do it? Sure. I mean, this is how they are in the country. So I wrote a press release, and then I went back to my friend. I said, hey, can I say this was submitted by Earth First? Sure, man, do whatever you want. So that was my first Earth First action, and they printed it in the Redwood Record. I mean, not only did I have a song on the air, now I was writing for the local paper. I wasn't any of these things in New York City. Yes, I was a big fish in a puddle. All right. But we were making a difference, and that was the important thing. And I was learning how to be a political activist by working in a small community.
And just at the time he'd come to Humboldt County, so had the Maxam Corporation, which radically changed the logging practices of the company it bought out.
Charles Hurwitz, who at the time ran his Maxam Corporation based out of New York, arrived in Humboldt County at the exact same time that I arrived out of New York. Two Jewish guys coming out of New York, one to tear down the redwoods, one to try to save them. And I said, he's got a failed savings and loan under his belt. He's working with Michael Milken, world-famous corporate ripoff. And I said, piece of cake. We're going to have this campaign over and done with in 2 years.
So I clear-cut all the trees, carved the mountains, spoiled the seas, proclaiming it the way that God had planned.
16 years later, I'm still here, and I have seen so many things go down. I've seen an activist killed in the woods. I've watched pieces of legislation in the United States Congress and the California Senate be introduced and fail, be introduced and pass. I've watched a woman sit in a tree for 2 years, and I've watched today 23 people sitting in trees in Humboldt County, another record being set by dedicated activists. I've watched the FBI target the national group I'm part of for destruction, conduct raid after raid, sting operations. I've watched myself, an inherently peaceful person who's never struck another human being, be accused of being a terrorist for bombing ourselves. I've seen amazing things go down in the last 16, 17 years. And I'm very grateful for all the lessons. And I'm not done yet, and we're not done yet.
We've left out the countless actions and organizings over the span of time. But I asked, some social activists manage to fuel themselves, at least for a time, by pure anger. What sustains you?
My spiritual path. Feeling like I'm doing the right thing and I'm at the right place. I feel all the pages and chapters that unfold as we go and point us in different directions are for a reason. As long as things still grow out of this ground, as long as new redwoods can keep coming up, yes, we can mourn the old ones, but there is still life on this planet. I know humanity has a chance to heal itself. No question in my mind. I think growing up in the 60s as a child played a significant role. To put it in perspective, I was 13 in 1969. But I read a lot. We subscribed to Life magazine. I watched the news every night. Got to watch the Vietnam War. Got to watch the protests. I listened to the Beatles at the age of 8 in 1964. And so I learned that there was something there. Even though my parents weren't teaching it to me, I knew it was there. I'm the kind of person that it doesn't necessarily come natural to. And I've had to learn from other people. You know, as a musician, musicians are good listeners. And I am a natural musician. And the best musicians are the ones who listen to the other musicians while they're playing. And the best musicians always want to play with somebody who's better than they are. In our society, we're taught that you need to be the best. You need to be better than everybody else. In the musical world, you say, I want to find everybody who's better than me. I want to hang out with them. I want to be the worst guy in the band, not the best. And I think that activists have done themselves a grave disservice by not using the arts as a means of expression. I mean, what would you rather have? An article in the New York Times? Give you a few column inches for one single day that maybe some people read and most don't? Or would you rather have a hit song about your issue that everybody can memorize and sing over and over and over again? I'll take the song any day of the week. And yet activists call up newspapers every day and ask them to run stories about their issues, but they never call up songwriters every day and ask them to write songs about their issues.
4 miles and they're closing down the mill at Potter Valley. Leaving all us good folks in a bind.
Things that really laid the greatest impressions on me, the things that really made the greatest impressions on me, were the redwoods of California and the desert of Arizona. It was as if I had landed on another planet. And I remember just that deep sense of spirit that I felt. I mean, I've always known that there was a God without putting a definition on that. But I think being in the redwoods was the first time I felt that divine presence. And then when I went to the desert, boy, it was as if we landed on the moon. It really expanded my mind and my thinking. And in one of the things that I've learned through the Earth First Movement was that we put forth ideas that nobody else has ever thought of or heard of. And they may not agree with them right away. But when people hear things that have never even occurred to them before, it jolts the mind. It expands the consciousness, even if they disagree with them. So for me, to go to the redwoods and see trees 17 feet wide and 350 feet tall that are 2,000 years of age, and then to go to the desert, see the saguaros, you know, standing 60, 70 feet tall, 200 years of age, and it just rattled my cage. And I firmly feel that a good chunk of humanity needs to have its cage rattled. And I think it's our job as political activists to put forth notions that haven't occurred to people, or maybe they haven't occurred to people for a long time since they've been suppressed in our consciousness by the forces of history. And for me, the test is this. We have become creators. We're godlike. Can we usurp the powers of God to move mountains, to eliminate entire species, to create new life through genetic engineering and really gamble with the fundamentals of life, to create nuclear bombs and leave wastes that will last forever as far as we're concerned, 500,000 years, that's a forever in my book. Can we do all that and elevate our consciousness in a manner that will match the degree of our elevated technology? I mean, Einstein was one of the first people to ask that question. And that question needs to be asked over and over again. It's a race. We've watched our technology evolve, and we're watching our spirituality evolve, our ability to handle our technology and to handle our relationships with each other. But it's a race. It's a test. And this test is not going to be over until we're either erased from this planet or until we've learned that we are interconnected with each other and interconnected with this earth.
On just 50 acres, 12 folks could work all year. We could have our jobs in forests too. We could have our jobs in forests too.
In Sebastopol, we were talking with Daryl Cherney. Daryl has a number of CDs. His website is www.darylcherney.com, and the Judy Berry website, www.judyberry.org, has full coverage of the bombing trial.
And even though the mainstream media are no longer required or expected to give equal time and balance on controversial issues, marginal little guys like ourselves are held to a higher standard. So in the interest of balance, we visit again our friends Walt and Patty in a suburb of Santa Rosa, at breakfast.
Hon, you okay? You want more coffee?
Boy, talk about dreams.
Bad dream?
Not bad exactly, just very weird. You know, kind of like an alternate reality. What was that?
Neighbors. You want to talk about it?
Oh, no, it's embarrassing to talk about dreams. You know, somebody at the office, you know, I had this really strange dream. It was trees. Oh, coffee, yeah. It was trees. I was reading the newspaper, and somebody had discovered that trees talk. They actually talk, but very slowly. You don't just sit around and wait for them to get to the point. They did these time-lapse things in the dream, I mean. This is ridiculous. Where they mic'd Yellowstone Park for about 30 years. And amazing things. It turns out they're a lot like us. They like baseball. They're about 15 years behind on the scores. And they get jealous because the pollen flies all over the place. But the scary thing was the plot.
Plot?
So I'm reading the newspaper, and then it's on the radio, the TV. It's all the same news. And there's FBI guys right in the kitchen. And then I'm in the FBI, and we're dealing with the fact that trees hate us. Okay, we chop them down, build shopping malls, clear-cut a couple of square miles, make them into newsprint to print all this absolute drivel, in their opinion. And we've got our nice trees in the backyard, but to them, that's like slavery. I mean, they used to be perfectly happy until all of this environmentalism. Their big buzzword is disempowerment, but it takes them about 6 weeks to say it.
Hon, do you think you should have a checkup?
So what we come up with, the FBI, is that they're all planning to die.
Who?
Trees. Deliberately. It's like, how do you like that, Buster? So what I'm dreaming, no more ornamental shrubs. Have to build plastic houses, make cardboard boxes out of your cat. You know, tree-lined boulevards, the old oaken bucket, spreading chestnut tree, I think that I shall never see a tree, all that stuff.
Did you take your vitamins?
So the one thing we can do to counter the plot is systematic eradication. Not every tree. We need trees. They're beautiful. But where they're in big clusters, like in forests, where they can actually plot and plan. The idea is we thin out the national forests so the trees are about 200 feet apart. Then let them try to surprise us. You know, in the long run, it's for their own good. Otherwise, asphalt.
But is that a forest, then?
Well, it depends on how you define it. But the point is, Patty, that they don't like us. What other choice do we have but to take them out?
But I mean, this is just a dream, right?
Dream? Oh, yeah, it's a dream. Yeah, of course it's a dream.
Hon, you really should have a checkup.
No, I think if I just drink a lot more before bed.
We were listening to Alternate Realities, one of the series.
That's our trips for this week. Hitchhiking Off the Map is produced by The Independent Eye with funding from the National Endowment for the Arts.
And from the Hitchhikers Guild, which you can join by visiting our website, www.independenteye.org. And please send us your comments.
You'll find our CDs there as well. Next up, two storytellers, a dream vision, Albania and Kosovo. This is Elizabeth Fuller.
And Conrad Bishop. And here's a final word from Daryl Cherney.
And as I looked on our success at creating such a mess, I swore.